At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Charlie Kirk murder, it is a story that is continuing to emerge with new information every single day. And we're going to discuss it here in just a moment with the retired FBI agent Jennifer Coffendaffer. But I need to say this, with the story changing literally every day, by the hour sometimes, facts, information flowing, changing. Understand that when you're consuming information about the story. Because something that someone may have reported yesterday or the day before, or what someone thought was a fact or was presented as a fact and turned out not to be a fact, a lot of people are just trying to report with the best information they have. So take a deep breath before you go and attack somebody who's just trying to do their job. Just saying that. We have had no issues here, but I've seen a lot of vitriol out there on this, where just because someone is saying something, maybe that's was reported yesterday or incorrect, or you're consuming it a few days later, doesn't mean they're out to be against you or this or that. They're just trying to report what's known at the moment in time. Okay, now that that's established, what we understand right now, no radical underground cell, no years-long plot, no militant manifesto. Instead, we're learning that the man who allegedly killed Kirk, 22-year-old Tyler Robinson, made the decision in just over a week, at least according to his writings that have been presented. And in that short time, he assembled a weapon, picked his target, left a handwritten note, and confessed in a flurry of text messages, all without alerting anybody. This isn't just a criminal investigation. It's a window into how supposedly a lone wolf in this violence can take root in silence and explode before anyone sees it coming. Jennifer, there's so much here to break down. I know you've been trying to break this down as well. Let's start with this handwritten note allegedly left underneath the keyboard. What's been your reaction to this piece coming out?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, this is incredible evidence. And I say this because this is not something that could be looked at as a coerced confession from law enforcement or a confession from somebody who's been a year in maximum security a security facility in lockdown. This is something that was voluntary. And these are the best kinds of confessions. Now, having to say that, there's a few caveats here, right? The original note, that seems to be called into question, which means the FBI is going to have to do the proper paper trail with the witness who would have discarded it, Mr. Twiggs, apparently, and how exactly that was discarded. And that's going to be something that a jury is going to have to look at all the details concerning that note and see if they buy it or they don't.
And I guess that's my question, and I think a lot of people in the public have about this. We don't have the note. Apparently, it has been destroyed. Walk me through what we know right now factually about how this thing was destroyed, why it was destroyed, and then how do we know what was actually on it?
Well, we know what was on it, my understanding, is from a photograph that was taken of it. And so now it's been transcribed, right? We can see it in typewritten fashion. And so
has the photograph been released to the public by chance? Do we know that?
Not that I have ever seen. Okay. Only all right. This is supposedly what's happening. And I loved your caveat at the beginning. This is fast moving. For me, I don't say anything that I don't hear from the FBI, from law enforcement, from a prosecutor. That's typically my source of information. And then sometimes I will use information from a reliable mainstream media source like News Nation that I know I can trust. But as you said, things are ever changing and being disseminated.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how this works. And if anyone has any understanding of how any breaking story happens, and this still is very much a breaking story, at the beginning, there is a lot of information. And because someone reports something incorrectly, doesn't mean they're trying to do it to hurt someone or anything. It's sometimes we just get facts incorrect. There are people out there that, yes, do report information that's not factual on purpose. It's not everyone, and it's probably not a majority of reputable reporters either. So, yeah, take a breath, everybody. Thank you. So what we know right now is that there's this letter that there's supposedly an image of. Do we know if it was handwritten? Do we know if it was typed? What do we know about it other than this?
All we know that I've read is that it was a letter. In fact, my information comes directly from the prosecutor.
Okay.
And the prosecutor did not delineate specifically whether it was handwritten. He said a letter that was written by Robinson, as I recall. So we don't know.
And then this would be having an image supposedly, we don't know, maybe the answer is this, we don't know, taken by the partner that found it and like on his phone took a picture supposedly. Is that how we're understanding this?
That's how we're understanding it. Now, the partner, and to be very clear, they have called him the lover. I refer to him as the lover because it's very confusing, right? Is he a roommate? Sure. Is he a partner? Is he a lover? He's a lover. That is how law enforcement is, in fact, describing him. His name is Lance Twiggs, and Lance Twiggs has purportedly took a picture of it, and that's what we're dealing with right now.
And then it'll be interesting to see handwriting analysis, all of that. I mean, it obviously needs to be verified, you know, that it was him because this is coming in from a third party now or another party, not directly, from him. But we'll see where that goes. I'd be very curious to see that. Do you think the FBI will release that in the near future just with the amount of eyes on this and the amount of transparency that really feels needs to exist in this investigation?
Well, when you look at it, a lot of people, particularly in the legal circles, are really hammering on this prosecutor for everything he's already released. Mm-hmm. A lot of legal beagles do not like what he has done. They're saying, they're concerned about jury pools being tainted and about this information coming out and the fact he said these are facts known, right? Saying that they're already facts.
Yeah.
But they are facts in his view. I mean, some things are just factual. A, we have text messages. A, we have DNA. Or B, we have DNA. C, we have this letter. It's not like he's making this up. I believe them to be actual facts. It's how a jury will interpret those. So, Tony, essentially, I think what we have is, even with this letter, Tony, it's going to depend on how well this chain of command can be proven. And if people believe Lance Twiggs, it makes a lot of sense because we have text messages where he was told by Robinson, listen, get rid of the, don't say you know anything, get rid of this letter. And so he does it. So it all kind of makes sense.
And I want to get to those text messages in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk about, I mean, and Robin and me were talking about this yesterday. We were texting back and forth about it. And his mind was just kind of blown on this. I'm curious to get your perspective of just how, I guess, callous this seems to have been. That this wasn't, when we think of actor that does this sort of things, it wasn't some long thought out ideology where he was, you know, as far as we can understand yet, you know, militarized or this or that. He was pissed, it seems, and knew he had access to a weapon and decided to go take the shot. I mean, at least according to the text message exchange, that's pretty much what we understand as of right now. Is it that simple? Because I think a lot of people are expecting, and their expectations may just be wrong, that this to be something far deeper, far greater, far more ideological, far more thought out. For this kind of impact on the world and people to have it been all orchestrated by somebody basically having an opinion and not having any sort of good problem-solving skills.
Well, when you look at cases like this, and I know all of us in the FBI come from a different place. We have different experience. We have different kinds of cases that we've investigated and been a part of. For me, I'm not surprised, but let me tell you why. Mm-hmm. When you look at like a McVeigh, who decided he was going to go and blow up a federal building using very archaic, getting a truck and, you know, getting some fertilizer. I mean, to blow something up, there's literally cookbooks online. Everybody knows this, so I'm giving you some big epiphany. And to shoot somebody again, all you need is a gun of a decent quality, like a Mauser, which was a high-quality rifle, combined with a good scope. That's all you need, really, to take anyone out you want. So, you know, unlike what people think in their minds, because they've watched way too many Mission Impossible shows, I think, these missions are not impossible. And when lone wolves, who the FBI has characterized for decades as being the number one issue in terms of terrorism, that is a problem for safety within our civilization, within the United States, it's completely understandable to me that they all emanate from individuals with wackadoodle philosophies that are angry at somebody, and then they decide to take action. It really is as simple as that. And there's historically been so many instances.
Is it because we feel psychologically safer if we think, well, there must be a lot more to something like this, and it would be easier to catch if there was much more back end to this story other than this guy seeing that Charlie Kirk was coming to his campus and deciding, I'm going to go do this? Because that really seems how this played out. If all of this ends up being completely accurate, I think sometimes it is safer to, in our minds, to think, well, it's a bigger, greater thing that would go after something like this or someone like this. Is that what's at play? Is that why we find it hard to believe sometimes that sometimes the simplest answer really is the reality?
Well, you know, no one likes to embrace Occam's razor. Mm-hmm. That's sort of, you know, my mantra and the mantra of most FBI agents. It's literally Occam's razor. It's not about some Israeli forces, Mossad working over here and getting people to orchestrate, you know, him to get on the roof and do this, and crooks to get on the roof and take a shot at the president.
Yeah.
These are kids that are angry. They have issues. They don't fit in society for various reasons. And quite frankly, they're just looking to make a huge name for themselves, to live in infamy. And I think that really is the crux of it. And for us to say, oh, this must be something greater, I think television weighs into that. I really do, Tony. You know, people think that television is reality, and it couldn't be further from reality when it comes to investigations and cases like this.
Well, sometimes it's interesting because our brains aren't the greatest at deciphering reality from fantasy. That's a big thing when it comes to television. While we may, you know, on the outside go, oh, yeah, that's a drama show, that's a reality show, sometimes our brains don't necessarily pick up that part of it. And then when it comes to the back end processing of things, we get confused. And then we have distinguished notions to go this way or that way, sometimes based on fantasy, but we're not necessarily realizing it at that moment in time. I want to talk about the text exchange, and I have it here next to me. I want to go through it for people who have not read this yet, and I want to get your reactions to it as we read through it. So this is Robinson and then the roommate, Twiggs. Robinson starts, "I'm still okay, my love, but I am stuck in Orem for a little while longer yet. Shouldn't be long, but I can come home, but I got to grab my rifle still. To be honest, I had hoped to keep this secret till I died of old age. I'm sorry to involve you." The roommate says, "You weren't the one who did it, right? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark." Robinson, "I am, comma. I'm sorry." Roommate, "I thought they caught the person, question mark. No, they grabbed some crazy old dude, then interrogated someone in similar clothing. I had planned to grab my rifle from the drop point shortly after, but most of that side of town is locked down now. It's quiet, almost enough to get out, but these one vehicle is lingering." I'm just going to stop there for a second on this. What's your take on this letter? And I don't know, the callousness of this, the language of this. I don't know. Is he that dumb, I guess, is the question. or something is feeling weird about this.
And a lot of people have said that. A lot of people have said, listen, people who are in this age bracket would never text like this. And I really don't believe that. You can't take because
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it just feels weird. I don't know what feels weird. So, I don't want to insinuate that I'm saying that. I just don't know. But it just feels, this idea that maybe he's that stupid. I mean, maybe he is. Just, I got to go grab my rifle. I thought I'd be able to get it. I thought I would live to old age. I mean, is this just some real grandiose thinking by a really stupid 22-year-old?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, the movie that I actually do think is true to form is Pulp Fiction, for anybody who's watched it. You know, they hit a bump and he shoots the guy in the back and he says, "Oh my gosh, I just killed Marvin." And, you know, they're arguing over who's going to clean up the brains. The reality of law enforcement, the reality of crime, is it becomes very normal. Mm-hmm. And so you talk in this sort of callous and everyday type vernacular when you're talking about things that are horrible, like an assassination. And it catches people off guard because they're talking about, it looks like they're talking about gardening or something. And it's that tone, like, "Wow, I forgot to pick up my stuff at the cleaners. Oh, I'm pretty sidetracked, but I'll get to the other side of town when I can." And you're talking about indicia of an assassination. So I get it, Tony. I get why it just seems so off.
And I think maybe that hits the tone more. Cause I mean, I did initially kind of feel like, another 22-year-olds don't talk this way. They don't. But look, he was a 4.0 student. He probably spoke a little more adult than other kids his age, I would say. And I mean, he's not a kid technically, but I'm not completely discounting that by any means. But I think that's what I'm getting, and that's the weird vibe to this is just the callousness of this whole thing. It continues with roommate, "Why?" And then Robinson, "Why did I do it? Yeah, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. If I'm able to grab my rifle unseen, I will have left no evidence. Going to attempt to retrieve it again. Hopefully they have moved on. I haven't seen anything about them finding it. How long have you been planning this? A bit over a week, I believe. I can get close to it, but there's a squad car parked right by. I think they already swept that spot, but I don't want to chance it." And then him again, "I'm wishing I had circled back and grabbed it as soon as I got my vehicle. I'm worried what my old man would do if I don't bring it back. Grandpa's rifle. I don't know if it had a serial number, but it wouldn't trace to me. I worry about prints. I had to leave it in the bushes where I changed outfits. Don't have the ability or time to bring it with. I might have to abandon it and hope they don't find prints. How the fuck will I explain losing it to my old man? Only thing I was left was the rifle wrapped in a towel. Remember how I was engraving bullets? The fucking messages are mostly a big meme. If I see notices bulge UWU on Fox News, I might have a stroke. All right, I'm going to have to leave it. That really fucking sucks. He's talking about this like it's like a, I said this to Robin and he agreed. I said it's like a, he's like talking about like it's a side mission on Grand Theft Auto. Like he's playing a video game. And this is real life. It's just the casualness is I get the shocking part of this whole thing. Does that shock you just how casual this is? We don't normally see, I guess, this level of casualness when talking about something like this or someone who just got caught with a, you know, or is admitting to such a crime.
The reason it doesn't surprise me, Tony, is I think working gangs for all those years, working organized crime, terrible crimes people do to one another, horrible. And you know, and then they go around and talk about a murder in text messages or in notes or on wires. And literally they're talking in this casual, that's the perfect word for it, in a casual discussion and vernacular. Like, again, I said, like picking up your laundry. It's so everyday. But remember, when this is something that you've done and it's been in your mind for a week and a half, and he doesn't care. I mean, at the end of the day, he doesn't care about Charlie Kirk. He doesn't care about the ramifications. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I know he was book smart. I saw the grades. Yes, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, yeah.
A lot of people who are book smart are not common sense and very smart. And that's one of these guys. This is one of these guys that's stupid, you know, when it comes to everyday life, I think.
I mean, did he want to get caught? I mean, that's the other part. I mean, it's like, look, he can't just be now realizing or thinking, gee, if I'm going to do this, there might be a serial number on the family weapon. Or, I mean, they're just very elementary things here that seem to have completely evaded this man's thinking. And that's what makes it very like, huh? You're realizing this now in a text to your lover?
Well, it's clear he didn't take the same course as that, you know, BK Brian Koberger who murdered the Idaho students took, right?
Maybe the lack of course. Yeah.
Because it's clear he didn't do criminology because you're right. He's failing every aspect of 101. He doesn't understand about fingerprints. He doesn't even consider seemingly DNA. He doesn't use gloves. He doesn't cover up his face. He doesn't cover up his body. He's a hot mess, which I've said from the minute this crime went down, I said, this is the sloppiest killer. There is no way he's affiliated with Mossad or with any Tifa or any other group because they would have made sure he went out and did the mission appropriately. This is how a school kid would do it. And he's a school kid.
But he thinks to change clothes. That's a big portion of this. And that he needs to disassemble the weapon before getting off the roof. It's like he did know some steps, but it's like, why would you do this, but not that?
Well, he took the obvious steps. Guys, as a point of getting that rifle where he needed to do it, he needed to remove the stock. So he needed the screwdriver to remove the stock, to make it smaller, to likely put the receiver and the barrel down his pant leg, from what I can tell. I tried this, and I put the whole gun down my pant leg, which I could run just fine with it. I wasn't moving around like him. But maybe I was thinking if he took that receiver off or if it was moving, you know, he's trying to... He's like moving. It made everything difficult for him to walk normally.
Yeah.
But the point is, he understands that the practicality of getting the gun from point A to point B, and then he worries, well, in case I'm seen, I'm going to change my clothes. But that, as you know, is at the minuscule level of what you need to do to cover up a crime.
I don't do a lot with them, so I'm not super knowledgeable, but I just would think the serial number thing, leaving it out in the woods or in the grass, wherever he left it, would be obvious things too. But I hear what you're saying completely, where it's some people can be very mechanically intelligent, but then have no social intelligence. And not that this is social intelligence, but I guess it would be a form of it, you know, of just how things work out there. Again, 22, there's plenty of, you know, talk to a lot of 22-year-olds. They're not the brightest all the time. I know I wasn't the brightest at that point either. I just wonder, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of baffled by the stupidity of what he was able to carry out and the stupidity to which he did at all levels.
You know, he had this drop point that I think was somehow going to be a savior. Ooh, if I have a drop point, then I could get my car and come back and get it. It never even occurred to him the place would be crawling with police after an event like
what,
this.
What exactly? That is just like, why would you not, again, what the hell? There's always the old radio adage. We used to do this stupid bit where it was stupid criminal of the week, you know, and it would always be just idiotic things that people do. And they exist to this day. We have too many stories. This seems like it's that with far greater repercussions than the coffee shop got robbed.
Well, let's be clear. That's why the FBI and law enforcement is usually successful. It's not necessarily that we're some sort of brilliant investigators as much as it is that the criminals are such idiots and they make mistake after mistake after mistake and usually leave a really easy trail for us, especially a 22-year-old who's never had any run-ins with the law before. He literally didn't think about anything. And as you well said, he spent a week and a half planning this out. It wasn't long enough.
Do you think he's stunned that he was caught? I mean, I know when we saw the photo that he was on, he was wearing the suicide vest. He talked about suicide ideation and things of that nature. I'm wondering if this is something where, this is, I don't know, maybe subconsciously or consciously, but he wanted to die. And he this was his way of going out, or he thought maybe this would be his way of going out. I don't know.
So I really don't think that. I think that this is a typical, and I hate to throw the word narcissist around. I'm not going to say it clinically. But
all roads lead to it.
Yeah. He really thought he wasn't going to get caught. He's like, listen, they don't have any way to catch me. Yeah, the serial number isn't going to go back to me. I mean, like they can't take step two and say grandfather could equal son and grandson. So he definitely, I think, just thought he would get away with it. You know, everything's going smoothly. They didn't find it yet. So to me, it's just somebody just like Luigi Mangione, just like Brian Koberger, just like Larry McVeigh or Timothy McVeigh. Sorry. They think they're going to get away with it because they're so smart.
Are you surprised at how quick he turned himself in? I mean, when it looked like people were coning in on him, his family obviously going, that looks like our kid. I can't imagine that moment. And then they sit him down and it feels like a Full House moment. Did you do this? I did this. Let's call the pastor. I mean, and I'm not trying to make light, but it was like, this is how this story ends. Like, I did it. I'm going to go turn myself. I was kind of surprised by that moment, too. It did kind of feel like an old sitcom where everything at the end of the story, people realize their faults and then they go do the right thing. Again, not how I would imagine something like this to happen, but none of this story is something I would think would have happened to begin with. But number two, how it's playing out and the characters involved.
Well, when you look at it, Tony, right, if you wrote a movie or a segment from a drama series and you had it play out this way, everyone in your audience would go, oh yeah, right.
That like, what is this, Full House? With a horrible, horrible plot line? I mean, that's how it feels.
Yeah, nobody would believe it, that he was stupid enough not to wear gloves. And that is what plays, I think, with people having problems accepting this.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it so up close. Kash Patel is so, crystal clear on what happened in terms of his transparency for the agency now, law enforcement, this prosecutor laying out his whole case. Now, we are going to see it in the preliminary hearing coming up. Mm-hmm. So it's giving us a flash of what we're going to see anyway, because there will be no indictment. There will be no grand jury. It's going to play out before us, which was different from the Idaho case and most other cases that we see. So he realizes that this is stuff that's going to come out. So that's why he gave us the playbook a little bit early. But the bottom line is, Tony, that's what I think is so unique to what's happening now. Before, in other cases, and I'll keep going back to Timothy McVeigh because he was another guy that I think is very similar in how he thought. We didn't see it all play out like this because we didn't have social media. True. Mainstream media didn't have these connections. Everything was kept, you know, locked behind closed doors in terms of this evidence. Now we get to see it. And everybody's going, wow, really? Things happen like this? They do.
He's, and again, this is a piece of information we have as of right now, and if I'm off on it, let me know. From what we've understood, he's not necessarily cooperating with the FBI as of this moment in time. I found that to be another interesting point, just because it's like he's ready to give it up in with the family. He's admitting he did it to his Discord group. He's admitting he did it to his family. He's admitting it in text. He's admitting it here and there, and now he's not cooperating?
Well, Tony, he probably has an attorney. I think he's gotten him attorney, and that was part of, you know, I'm sure the friend who's the minister, who was the former law enforcement officer, I'm sure he said, you got to get him an attorney so his rights are protected, one. And so I think he's just, you know.
Maybe he's just saying, I'm not talking till I get an attorney.
Yeah, and who he shouldn't. He shouldn't be talking.
Sure.
And also, secondarily to that, listen, he is facing the death penalty. And with all the evidence we can see so far, this seems really strong of a
pretty
case.
Pretty much guaranteed at this point, I would say.
Well, the fingerprint on the trigger kills it.
Yeah.
Even if it's your grandparent, and they could say, well, he had it in the house. That's when the trigger. Yeah, okay. Let a jury mull that all over with you add everything else up. It's like the sheath with the Idaho case. All right, you've got all of this and DNA on the sheath, and now you have DNA on the trigger and on the gun. It's so problematic. I think it's a strong case. Only in this case, I just can't imagine that they're going to bargain. I really don't think they're going to bargain way down the road, but we'll see.
What is there to bargain for? I mean, he's admitted it. I mean, well, he's admitted to family. I mean, we don't know, has he admitted it to law? Because there's a difference between I admit this to family or law enforcement. I mean, so where does that stand as of this second?
Well, he's admitted it to family, and they would be calling the father. That remember, the mother was the first to recognize her son and then went to the father. And then the gun comes out. And they're like, can you send me a picture of grandpa's gun so I know you have it? And then, of course, he says, oh, I think I'm going to ignore that one. So you're right. It's such a strong case. Look, I think this guy is facing, you know, well, he is going to face death, the death penalty, unless something severely changes in some way, which I can't imagine.
I mean, is this what domestic radicalization looks like now? It's quiet, it's fast, and it is deeply personal. I mean, because that really... If we're trying to figure out what the trigger is here, I mean, it could have simply been Charlie Kirk is coming to town and I disagree with him and I want him dead. Or, I mean, is that it? Just Charlie Kirk showing up, or is there something deeper going on? I mean, obviously, from what we can glean right now, I'm going to assume he probably did not agree with Charlie on most things. And again, that I guess would be going back to the triggering event being Charlie Kirk coming to town. But we don't see a whole lot of other things in his life that are, you know, super triggering. I get his family probably did not agree with his lifestyle in that. But then from that to this, it's like, okay, what the hell's happening here?
Well, the family talks about a discussion they had with their son, where it's brought up that he's going to be in Orem and he's going to be doing his, you know, prove me wrong, you know, debating. And apparently, Tyler Robinson reacts to that and says words to the effect of, oh, well, that's a quote unquote stupid place for him to do that. And goes on a diatribe about how he disagrees with Charlie Kirk. And the bottom line is, I think that Charlie Kirk really was more integral and touched a certain, you know, the 20-year-olds, right? I mean, personally, for me, I didn't watch Charlie Kirk, but I remember different TikToks and things like that that would come in my feed that would be snippets of what he said, right? But some of the youth are very well-versed about Kirk. I mean, much more well-known in that age parameter. So I think he very well knew Charlie Kirk and followed him in a negative, visceral way. And he's like, oh, my gosh, he's what, 2.5, 3 hours away? I think I'm going to drive up there.
So, yeah, where I can when you try to put your mind into that gymnastics of someone who would do this, it would be. I mean, he could stand for far, far worse than being just something that has a very, very different opinion of you, no matter how different it may be. Some will take that to quite an extreme rather than move on and, okay, you can have a different opinion and it's okay. We're going to go our different ways. Don't have to be part of each other's lives. Some will want to extinguish the other opinion completely. I mean, does the FBI have models for identifying these short fuse actors? Because it seems like I think we just lit a tinderbox of a fireworks stand of short fuse actors here that I'm really scared to see what the coming weeks and months have ahead of us.
Well, I think many of us have put forth that the FBI is going to have to completely change its direction, law enforcement as a whole, in terms of evaluating individuals who are saying things online and then appropriately investigating those. This has just all got to change, because if you look at school shooters, mass shooters, assassins, it's not that they don't talk about it. They talk about it. They write about it before it ever happens. Mm-hmm. We need to get better about identifying that. And it's going to have to be done through AI programming, I think.
And there's a big difference, though, between somebody out there saying, I'm going to go shoot somebody, and someone who disagrees with someone for their political beliefs. And I feel like we're entering some pretty scary territory right now, where just those disagreements, not any threat, not any I hate you, not even any I want to hurt you, or just nothing, just simple disagreement right now seems to be on the line of possible chopping block for some. That's a scary place to be in.
Well, I agree. I mean, certainly our constitutional right of free speech has to be protected, but there is a line there. You can't threaten. And if you have somebody saying, I can't wait to murder this guy, I'm going to get a gun.
I agree. All for that. Go after those people. Yeah. That's not protected free speech. I guess what I worry about is just anyone disagreeing on whatever side it may be they disagree with, and then one side having either more power politically or more power in terms of activated people out there. Basically what we're talking about here, these, you know, kind of short fuse actors, if you will, that will then go, oh my gosh, you disagree with me on X issue. We must silence you. But the person is not doing anything. It's just regular political, you know, debate that we have in our country, which Charlie, you know, is championed, that's, you know, what he would say he would have championed in a lot of parts of his life. But that's a scary point. And how is this going to be deciphered of what is dangerous speech and what is not dangerous speech, I guess?
Well, and I know what you're speaking of. And certainly Pam Bondi recently came out and, you know, was talking about hate speech. And there wasn't a lot of defining that, but how I took that is hate speech that leads to a threat, and the threat is where you cross the line.
Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, anybody could say something that they disagree with, and then the more extreme person could go, yeah, I disagree with that, and then it leads someone else to, would this have to be in the same line of the same individual making the threat that makes the hate speech? Because one could say, well, this person disagreed vehemently with it, but they didn't make any threat. They just disagreed, because we're allowed to do that in this country. And then someone else jumps on that is more extreme. I mean, we are walking a very fine line right now.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting. I totally agree with you. Kash Patel said before the hearings that specifically they're looking at more than 20. In fact, he scoffed at the number 20. That were involved in this Discord group that that Tyler Robinson was involved in. He scoffed at it and he said, listen, there's way more than 20 and we're going to be looking at everybody. I guarantee agents are already knocking on the doors of those people that were involved in that Discord, those people that were involved. In other words, were they egging him on? Were they as hard as lever twigs? What all happened to get him, as you said, from point A to point murdering somebody in a week? What all ignited that? Or was it just him? The FBI is going to be getting to the bottom of it. So to your point, that begs the question, does that mean just ideologically, I push you and push you and push you, but I don't make any threats? Can you be charged?
And look, I can understand that area. I think the concern a lot of American citizens have right now more so is just going on Facebook and disagreeing. Disagreeing on either directions in some points where if I say this out loud, what could the consequence be? And we've never been in a place where it's like, oh, this could actually, like, me, not a threat, but just someone disagreeing with a policy, whether this or that could lead to much further action than just somebody, you know, giving you a thumbs down or disagreeing and making a nasty comment to you.
Well, I think the other thing that needs to be considered, I think what you're talking about should not be in jeopardy. But, you know, they just arrested, I think he was a 12 or 13-year-old, I think he was 13, who had a bunch of guns, who said he was angry, who wanted to kill, right? So he's saying all these things.
Good. Arrest him.
And they arrested him. But then they just let him back out, by the way, on bond, which I'm like, oh, my gosh, what are we doing here?
Well, we let rapists and murderers and all that out, and then we prosecute the dads when they rescue their daughters who have been kidnapped. So only in America, as Brooks and Dunn would say. Maybe it's time we do a new version of that song with new lyrics. What do you think?
I think so.
I don't think they would want to sing them. I think that's the problem. So much to talk about. So fascinating. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for coming on. And as I've said to Robin, too, just being voices of reason in a very, very confusing time right now, and being able to talk about these things without having politics being involved, but addressing the concerns that so many people have. I think that's very important. So thank you so much for coming on. Break the Case is your podcast. You can check it out anywhere you get podcasts and on YouTube. Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Be sure to check that out. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.